Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are here to talk all about our guilty pleasures. Oh, yeah, no, we're not going down that path, folks. Not that one. We're talking about our geeky guilty pleasures. You know, things that, you know, you might just not know about some of us, that, you know, you might actually find out some new things about the hosts and some of our guests. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we got a great crew to talk all about it. Of course, who else would I be talking to at the beginning of the show? But my co-host, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you this week, sir?
You can tell everybody I am your guilty pleasure.
For 7.5 years almost. Jesus.
Yep. I'm really looking forward to tonight. I mean, this it could be anything. I don't even know what I'm going to reveal tonight. So it's going to be very exciting for our listeners. Hopefully, maybe, hopefully not. But we'll see. I mean, we've got some interesting people to talk about guilty pleasures. So it, it's going to be interesting.
I think so. I definitely think it'll be interesting.
Geek confessionals.
Geek confessionals from the darkest recesses of our minds.
Well, I don't think we're ready to go that far.
Damn. So with that being said, we want to hear from you. We want to hear you about your guilty pleasures in the geek community. You know who we're talking about. You're listening and you're going, are they talking to me? Well, we want to hear from you. ESOpodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. All right, let's get started with this episode. And we actually are joined by Ashley Pauls, our movie gal, and she is here. We've got a lot of movie stuff to talk about at the beginning of the show. And actually, she's going to be with us for the next 2 weeks anyway. So you might as well just pull up a chair and not plan on leaving.
I'll make myself comfortable up here in the station.
No, you have a seat always. It even looks like a director's chair.
Oh, hey, I appreciate that.
It used to be the geek seat, but we made it special just for you.
Oh, well, I feel very loved and important.
Yeah, you could just wipe off the blood. It's okay.
Oh dear. Okay, I won't pay too close attention to that.
Don't worry about it. JD was supposed to clean it, but you know how hard help is hard to get.
I think it's JD's blood.
It possibly is.
I really don't want to know.
Well, we're going to first, of course, we had a passing in the geek community yesterday, and it hit a lot of people really tough because this was out of the blue. We actually lost Bill Paxton out of nowhere because he died from complications during surgery.
Yeah, he was having heart surgery, and yeah, things got complicated, and he didn't make it. And that was 61 years old, has a active show on television right now on CBS, The Training Day, very, very surprising. I mean, so young. Yes, 61 is young, and it's such a nobody could prepare for it. I feel really bad for his family, and of course, all his fans, of which I am one of them. I mean, he will be missed.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, I saw this one pop up on social media over the weekend. It's one of those where you hope, oh, please let this one be a hoax. And unfortunately, he wasn't. I know he's a great character actor who's special to a lot of people in a lot of franchises, from Alien to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's one that's going to be hard to replace, definitely, and has a lot of good memories for sci-fi and geek fans.
What was your first experience with his work?
Oh gosh, probably the Alien franchise, I think. And then just really enjoyed his performance on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And he's one of those actors that just pops up in all kinds of places. And whenever I see him, I'm like, oh, it's Bill Paxton. It's always kind of a nice little surprise. So I will miss seeing him pop up in movies and TV shows like that.
Nope, agreed. What about you, Mikey?
I can't even remember the first time I saw him. I mean, he was, even though he's a few years older than I am, he was one of those guys that just like appeared in movies. I mean, he if you're a geek like us, I mean, he's in everything, and he's one of the few actors that has played characters that have been killed by Terminator, Alien, and Predator in three separate movies. Mm-hmm. I think there's only a couple of other actors that they make that claim. And and he had he didn't do the leading man very much, but he could if needed be. And he played a lot of supporting characters. I remember seeing him in Weird Science, as Brother Chet. He could play comedy. He could play drama, horror. He could be a heel. He could be a face. He could be like anything you needed him to be. I mean, he's most known probably for his role in Aliens. I mean, he made the phrase "game over, man" something that everybody says now.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's interesting because for me, his first memories of him was Weird Science as Chet, with the shotguns and, being the real jerk. But he was great. He was great in movies like we've mentioned. Of course, we've mentioned Aliens, but also Twister, where he was the lead with Helen Hunt.
He's the lead in Twister? Yeah. I think one of my favorite performances, and I haven't seen it for a while, but I was reminded of it this weekend, of course, when I was looking through his database of movies. If anybody out there has not seen A Simple Plan, they need to. And I'm going to go rewatch that again. It's a Sam Raimi movie with Bill Paxton and Billy Bob Thornton, and Bill Paxton is really the lead in it. And it's such a great performance. I think it's one of his best performances. He's really good in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And he was great because he wasn't the everyman, but he was more folksy than a lot.
I've heard from people who've met him that he's very down to earth, extremely down to earth. And that I think is shows in his performances, because he's a guy that, you could probably see, you feel like you could have a drink with.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's why it was a little bit of a surprise, like when he turned bad on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when he ended up being Hydra.
Spoilers.
Oh, please. It's 3 years old already.
No, yeah. But that's the beauty of Paxton. I mean, he could play a face or a heel. So, he could switch like on a dime as if need be. Mm-hmm. And I understand that Training Day was doing decently. It was a show that I was kind of curious to check out just because of he was associated with it. I understand that the first season of Training Day has been shot, and they do have a way to write off his character should they want to continue with the show. So I feel for them, because that's an awkward situation to be in. I just hope they treat his character and him, his last performance with respect. But I understand that I think this week or when the next episode of Training Day airs, they're going to have a special dedication to him. And look, as far as I know, there wasn't anybody in Hollywood or in the industry or whatever that didn't like the guy. So I can't imagine anybody trying to do anything disrespectful to him at this point.
Oh, no. They saved that for the Oscars. We might as well jump in with both feet, my friends. Man, what a shipwreck that was.
I thought it was fine. The last thing, there was a little muck up at the end, but other than that, I didn't think anything else. I think people are making too much of a big deal about the end. I mean, I feel sorry for the people that, I watched it live. I feel sorry for La La Land, because they got, kind of oops, it was like one of those things where it's like, no, you didn't win. And that's unfortunate. But, it happens. I mean, mistakes happen. This has never happened before in the 100 years they've been doing this or whatever. So, look, it's no big deal, really.
Well, there has been rumor of it happening before, but they never played it up like this.
I don't think it's ever happened before.
Well, the rumor was that Jack Palance
No, like, that didn't happen. That's it didn't happen. Like people go that people are just they can't believe that Marisa Tomei actually won an Oscar. So they have to figure out some way to rationalize it. But let me tell you, there's no way the Academy is going to let somebody claim someone else's Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe that that ever happened. I don't believe that he read the wrong name and she got the award just because he read the wrong name. Yeah. I just don't.
Well, you never know. And it'll be go into folklore forever.
I mean, what's, like, and of all the things that have happened Oscar wise of people getting awards, I just don't think that, and that's a disrespect to Jack Palance too. I mean, he's a weird guy, but look, as far as last night goes, I didn't have too many dogs in the fight, so to speak. I hate to use the Michael Vick term, but I just hadn't seen a lot of the movies. So I didn't really go in thinking, oh, I really want this movie to win. I really want this movie to win. With one exception, which I was very disappointed that the best animated film did not go to Kubo and the Two Strings. I've made no bones about it. That's my favorite movie from last year. And I haven't seen Zootopia, so forgive me, but Kubo was robbed.
That was probably my biggest disappointment of the night also. It's really keeping my fingers crossed for Kubo. I know some of the other animated films have been receiving more buzz, like they were going to get the Oscars, but I really hope that one would be a surprise. But just looks like, unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It was interesting because Zootopia was great. It was a fun film, and it really had a good message of acceptance of, you know, with the movie, it was all different species and such. But with, you know, they did it with animals. And it was just, you know, no matter what you look like, what color, what race, whatever, that's, you know, you had to accept people for who they were, not what they could be or, you know, that type of thing. And so I could understand that, especially in this day and age. But I thought Kubo, hands down, was the better. And I was a little surprised that Suicide Squad won for best makeup.
I was too. I was disappointed. I'd really hoped that would go to Star Trek Beyond. I loved all the alien and the elaborate creatures, but I guess now we can say Suicide Squad is an Oscar winning film.
We can, and Kubo is not. That seems weird. Oh. But I will say also, it, you know, for those people who like to do the whole DCU versus MCU thing, DCU has now won Oscar. And for all the success that the MCU has had since Iron Man, they do not have an Oscar. So take that, MCU. DCU holds the Oscar.
Dun, dun, dun.
And it's a very strange one, but hey, look, I mean, I thought the makeup in Suicide Squad was pretty good as well. So I could have gone either way with that. It was kind of an interesting choice.
You should have heard Jennifer Hartshorn yelling and screaming about Doctor Strange not winning Best Special Effects.
Yeah, well, which one won? Was it Arrival?
Jungle Book.
Jungle Book.
That's right. Yeah, Jungle Book, which... I've heard good things about that. I haven't seen any of these, so I can't really speak to how good they are. I mean, the special effects in Doctor Strange are pretty good. So I will say that it was worthy, but I haven't seen Jungle Book. So, and I do understand that when they had their science awards, that Jungle Book did innovate a lot of techniques so that, you know, that in and of itself would give it an edge over something like Doctor Strange because it was actually innovative.
That's interesting.
So, I mean, they actually showed I don't know if you saw the clips that they showed of the science and technology awards, but you could tell that that someone won an award just for like this apparatus where the kid was riding the tiger. And they just use these like new techniques that have helped the industry. So when you do that, you tend to get awards.
Oh, but, yeah, it happens.
I will say I was very like, okay, so. Like I said, I haven't seen any of the movies, so, and I'm curious to what you guys think, because I don't know, you've probably seen a lot more of the movies that were nominated than I did, but I will say, looking at them, because this is the first time I've really got a chance to see a lot of samples of these movies, Arrival impressed me visually, because it just looks spectacular, so That's on my list. And even before it slipped in and won Best Picture, I did think that Moonlight looked really interesting. So those are the two movies that I came away with and said, I need to see those. And, you know, I like musicals too, so I'm curious about La La Land as well.
Mm-hmm. There's some really good stuff that was nominated this year, and I've seen a couple of them. I would have been happy with any of them winning. The one thing I had the issue with the show, though, was I didn't mind, you know, what was going on with the whole, you know, I guess, you know, how do I want to say this properly? It really, really sucked, the whole thing between the host and Matt Damon. It was the first couple times it was funny, but after that it was like, it's kind of like the Oprah Uma thing that Letterman did years ago.
I disagree completely. I thought it was hilarious all the way through, especially when he was playing him off. Like every time he spoke, he would just play the music to play him off. That was so funny.
And even at the end,
the last thing he says, like, and it's like, here we go for Best Picture. And, you know, a chance to see Matt Damon. Like, he just kept hammering. And this is something that they've had for like decades. So like I thought it was funny. I thought that was one of the few things that they did that was funny. Like, I don't like bits where they waste time, because like the show is long enough and right. We know it's like an award show. So don't waste time with this whole, let's bring a bus full of people in and have them meet celebrities. Like, that to me was a waste of time. The whole like, oh, let's see celebrities read tweets about themselves. That's a waste of time. I don't need that. I just like, let's move on and get these awards out.
I think part of the challenge with the Oscars is they're trying to strike a balance between like the pageantry and the prestige of the awards. Like, these are our Hollywood's arguably most coveted awards, but yet they're also trying to get people to tune in and watch and do viral moments. So I think they haven't quite found the balance of how to do like this modern era award show, how they kind of keep up the pageantry and the stars, but also get so people watch. I think I read somewhere that viewing has declined again this year. So they're having, I think, a hard time getting people to keep tuning into the ceremony, probably because sometimes people can just go on social media and find the awards on their own.
You know, this was the first year that I almost shut it off multiple times. But the only reason I stayed with it was because I knew we were going to be talking about it on the podcast tonight.
Well, that's what was surprising, because you like changed our schedule so that you wanted to watch it. I was kind of surprised because I didn't think that you really watched it all that much. I mean, no. I have a history of really watching, like, and I'll stay. Like, I'll watch the whole thing.
I usually do, but I was just finding the whole show pretty intolerable. I was bored as heck throughout pretty much the whole episode thing.
Yeah, I wasn't bored. I thought that, and to me, maybe it's because I hadn't seen the movie, so I was learning about them as I was watching. And there was only a few times, like I said, those two bits that I mentioned, that I thought there was a complete waste of time. But I thought everything else was done pretty well. And I did think the In Memoriam section was short. Like,
it was way too short. And the rumor going around is that someone was up there that's still alive.
Oh, wow. Oops.
Yeah.
I saw
a report about that today. They put the wrong picture with the name of a person who was up there. So kind of one and other unfortunate snafu to add to the night.
Well, when you compare it to the clip that TCM does every year, like, the Oscar one doesn't really hold a candle. They really need to up their game, I think, when it comes to showing the performances and showing the people that we've lost, rather than just putting up a picture and saying, yeah, we lost them. Here, let's have someone sing while you see pictures. Like, it doesn't, like, it used to be that they would actually show clips and you would appreciate what they've done, but they don't do that anymore. And Turner Classic Movies does that. They do a really good job at the end of every year and having a nice tribute. And I think the Oscars need to step up their game as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's too many other shows out there that are a lot more entertaining than this. And I honestly say this, Judy was asleep within the first half hour, 45 minutes. And she woke up for Best Actor.
I think that, I think to your point, Ashley, I think that also another key indicator of whether or not people watch is if they care about who wins. And
yes.
I don't think that there was enough movies that a lot of people had seen this year. I mean, they had a good, I think the movies were a good range of pictures, and they all seemed to be worthy of nominating, but they weren't wide released. Like, I don't think there were too many movies that a lot of people could get behind and actually go, yes, we want this to win.
I'd agree. I think La La Land is maybe the most visible one out of the whole list, which kind of makes the whole Best Picture mess up funny because that one was the one projected to win.
Yeah, I think so, when they went up there, everybody was like, yeah, this makes sense because they won a lot of awards.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It was interesting, and I don't know about that, if it was that the viewership was down because of who was nominated, including Best Actor or Actress. I'm impressed that Casey Affleck won because Manchester by the Sea was awesome. That was an incredible movie.
That's another one that I do want to see as well. It looked interesting, I must say.
Mm-hmm. It was good. So we want to hear from you guys, of course. Please let us know. Write us esopodcast@gmail.com. And, you know, maybe we'll read your answers on the air, or maybe we'll read somebody else's and give you credit for it.
Yes. Can I be Faye Dunaway?
Of course you can. You can even wear that dress she wore.
She looked great, by the way.
Judy saw it and was like, no, she never had any plastic surgery there.
I don't care. I thought she looked great.
She did look great. She did. So with that being said, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with our Geek Seat segment.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows, and what's on the other side? Rainbows.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Cornflake.
So we host the Flopcast.
We cover nerd and geek subjects of all types, but this is sort of a sillier, goofier side of geekdom, I'd say.
We love to talk about music, especially funny music.
We talk about comic books, conventions.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah. I'd say if you're going to put the Flopcast in Brady Bunch terms, we're like the Cousin Oliver of podcasting. And we do a ridiculous new Flopcast episode every week.
What is wrong with us?
We really have nothing else to do. We're part of the Earth Station One podcast network.
And you can find us at flopcast.net.
We heard and answered when wished on the morning star. Somebody thought of that, and someone believed it. Look what it's done so far.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now we are here to talk with Michael Kingston. Welcome to Earth Station One, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Welcome to the station. For those people who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I write and create a wrestling comic book called Headlocked. It's sort of my, you know, my comic baby, and I work with a lot of famous wrestlers on it. All the art in the book's done by wrestlers. So that's really what I do for the most part.
It's a great book, and I think if I'm not mistaken, it's been around for, wow, have you been doing this for 10 years?
Not quite. We published our first like sort of single issues with Mark Hoja back in 2008, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And then there was sort of a 5-year hiatus where I was trying to find, I guess, the right way to distribute it. And it wasn't really until Kickstarter became a viable thing that I was able to move forward again. And now we've, you know, sort of picked up steam here in the last couple of years.
Boy, crowdfunding has really helped a lot, right?
It is. It's amazing to me, you know, when I hear so many comic book retailers say, they told me, I can't sell this book or whatever, you know, when I was originally pitching it, and obviously there's a market for it. So, you know, we've done pretty well for ourselves.
I don't know what they're talking about there, brother.
It is a very unique book, and it's, you know, most wrestling books that I'm familiar with, most wrestling comics, were all about sort of the kayfabe side of the business, right?
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's honestly where this all came from. I mean, I've been a wrestling fan and a comic book fan since I was like 8 years old, and I bought every wrestling comic that came out. And I mean, they were all trash. I mean, just, you can kind of look back at the WCW book sort of ironically now, but
yeah,
for the most part, I mean, Kevin Nash is Mad Max and Undertaker fighting demons and Ultimate Warrior stripping Santa Claus naked. I mean, all that stuff was just awful. And, you know, you could always tell it was written by somebody who, you know, somebody bought a license when wrestling was hot and figured they'd turn a few bucks on it. But you could tell, I mean, if you're a wrestling fan, you know when people like wrestling and when people don't. I mean, historically, licensed wrestling products have been horrible and dismissive towards the fan base. I mean, Ready to Rumble, obviously, the protagonists are idiot wrestling fans. I remember when SmackDown was on UPN and they had a show after it called The Mullets. And it was, again, idiot wrestling fans. You know, you're trying to sell this to wrestling fans. And I think that's, you know, a total insanity to me. You're insulting your audience right from the get-go. So it just became clear to me no one was ever going to make the book that I wanted to read. So I decided to make it myself.
It's a great parallel with sort of, you know, nerd culture, comic culture as fans, because whenever, you know, seen comic book fans depicted throughout my life, I mean, usually they were not depicted in a very favorable light.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think both of those things, both wrestling and comics, have always been sort of looked down upon by the general public. And it's obviously the worm is turned on that. But I think it's, you know, it's good to see some of it. You know, I mean, wrestling is sort of coming back into the, you know, sort of like mainstream accepted now. And I mean, comics are obviously huge. So it's I'm happy to see that.
When you started on the journey with making Headlocked and having it sort of more of a behind the scenes look at the real world of wrestling. And this is way before, you know, something like the movie The Wrestler came about. Did you already know a lot about behind the scenes, or was that a journey for you as well to learn?
I mean, I mean, there's obviously layers, I think, of things that you can know in wrestling. So, I mean, there's stuff that you can find on the internet, which, you know, is probably 50% right, 50% wrong. You know, but then, I mean, when I decided I was going to write it, I spent a couple of days in North Carolina just taking bumps with some guys. It's crazy, you know, like somebody like reached out to me that I had never met and was like, hey, me and some guys are big comic fans. And, you know, if you're going to do this book, we'd like you to do it right. So why don't you come down and, you know, take some bumps with us? And like, okay. And I mean, now when you say that, you know, when you think about that now, you're like, man, that could have gone so bad for me.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and I just hopped in my car and drove to North Carolina and, you know, spent a couple of days taking bumps with guys. And it was great. I mean, it was fun. And it definitely gave you a feel for, you know, what I was writing about. And, you know, I was glad I did it. But, you know, it's one of those things where now I'm like, man, that's crazy.
Did you ever have any sort of notion or dreams ever of being a wrestler?
When I was younger, sure.
You before know, you knew?
Oh, not even. I mean, just, you know, I mean, I think life also, I mean, I didn't grow up with a, you know, I grew up kind of poor and whatever. So, I mean, once I got out of school, it was time to go to work. I mean, one of the things about, you know, having the luxury to chase your dream, you know, is that it requires a certain amount of, you know, finances. I mean, it's a lot harder for somebody who doesn't have money to chase their dream. And, you know, as I got older, I was able to, you know, put myself in a better financial position, you know, than I was growing up. And then that enabled me to have the sort of the freedom to do what I'm doing. Not freedom per se, because I mean, I still work like 65 hours a week, but, you know, I mean, it's, everything's an investment level. You know, I mean, you need money to go to wrestling school. You need money to, you know, you need the ability to have a flexibility in your job to go to wrestling school and still pay your electric bills and all those things. So, you know, like a homeless guy can't start wrestling tomorrow. So it's, you know, that just life didn't work out for me like that. I mean, had I been in different circumstances, I probably almost definitely would have gone to wrestling school.
Cool. There's certainly a lot of parallels with not only comics, but sort of any sort of journey to trying to make your dream happen. So in addition to being a sort of a great insight into the wrestling business, I think it also just is a great tale of perseverance and endurance and what it takes to make it happen.
And I think that that's, I mean, I think that that's true. I think every dream sort of has these basic tenets of, you know, you go through this emotional roller coaster of self-doubt and, you know, optimism. And, you know, one of the themes that we're focusing on in this upcoming book is, you know, kids are, when you're younger, you have this optimism and you think like the world is going to bend to you because, you know, you've had these stories filled in your head where, you know, in a 20-minute montage, somebody learns, you know, how, you know, learns whatever it is that they needed to learn to make whatever they need to make happen. And I think that, you know, that gives people sort of false hope that, you know, they don't, when they say, you know, I'm chasing my dream, I don't think they understand. I don't think anybody understands what that entails when you start. I mean, you may have an idea, but I don't think you ever understand the full scope of it. So, I mean, and I think that's whether you're trying to start a band or you're trying to join the NBA or you're trying to write a wrestling comic, you know, there's just the obstacles may be different, but I think the general arc is sort of the same for everyone.
Yeah, there's sort of a moment where, you know, when you're dreaming of something and that all of a sudden there will come a point where, and in your book, it's literally a slap in the face where you have to adjust the dream to some sort of practical, real plan.
Yeah. And I mean, like for me, for instance, I mean, like I've read comics my whole life, but I never understood how the business worked. You know, so I came up with an idea for Headlocked and I wrote it out on paper and I put together a business plan of where I would sell it and, you know, these different retail outlets and all the things that I ended up doing, you know, and I would go to publishers and they'd be like, well, where's your art? And I'm like, well, I'm a writer. I don't have art. No, you got to have art. Like, yeah. Well, you're a comic book company and I'm a writer. Like, it would be far easier for you to come up with an artist than it would be for me to come up with an artist. Like, that's not how this works.
Right.
And I guess then you start to learn that just about every comic book that's ever been produced has been produced sort of on the back end, you know, outside of, you know, some of the bigger stuff. And that it's just, you know, I thought my job would be to pitch an idea to people, but it's not. So it's basically you assemble the entire thing yourself and then try to get someone to distribute it. So they're not really publishers per se. They're just sort of distributors.
Yep.
But then you have to adjust, and I had to adjust to that.
It is a very much, and just, you know, like almost anything else out there that you want to do, you sort of have to make those adjustments. And I think that's also what I take from Headlocked as well, which is a very real story about that. And do you have an end in sight, or is it just, you know, we're just going with, you know, his journey?
I mean, I know how the story ends. Basically, the length of the middle is up to, you know, how long people will allow me to write it. I mean, wrestling is such a rich subculture, and it's different all over the world. I mean, I could spend five books taking him to Japan, and I could spend books taking him to, you know, to the UK or to Mexico, and to do all these different things. I mean, how long could you tell a story about a guy being backstage in WWE? And I mean, we're still, you know, he's still learning to run the ropes at this point. So, yeah. I mean, I could, in theory, write it forever. I could end it two books from now too. So, I mean, it really depends on what the, you know, how long people allow me to write it.
And well, I'm hoping it doesn't end anytime soon. And for the listeners out there, not only is the great thing about certainly the volumes that you're producing now is you're telling the story of your main character, and that's a great journey to read. And then you usually fill up with the back with three or four or five backup stories that feature, like as you said, prominent wrestlers in the industry.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing. I guess that's, you know, the geek out thing for 8-year-old me, getting to work with, you know, guys I grew up admiring. And I think a lot of those guys have wrestlers have such a they're all natural storytellers. I think whether it's you're telling stories in the ring, you're telling stories in the car on the next, on your way to the next show, like it's just what they do. It's what they always do. So, adapting that to comics has been a snap. I worked out a full story with John Morrison in 12 minutes and I think it's a great story. Sometimes it doesn't, go that easy, but it's been super fun. I mean, we've been lucky to have so many big names. And the book we've got now that we're producing on Kickstarter is for me, like a bucket list of just bucket list name after bucket list name that I get to contribute with. And I couldn't be happier with, where we're at the moment.
And also I should point out too, it features great artwork. Not only the sequential story artwork, but also you have contributions from Jill Thompson, as well as most of your, I think all your covers are by Jerry the King Lawler, right?
Yeah, no, that's, he's the regular cover artist. And, one of the things that I like to do to sort of hammer the theme home of wrestling as an art form is to have all the art, as much as possible produced by actual wrestlers. So, Mikel Molopolo is our artist and he's a Samoan wrestler from New Zealand. And then Jerry does the covers. We've had pinups from Booker T, Ken Anderson, Sin Modi, Sam Shaw. We have Fred Ottman, Tugboat, Typhoon, Shockmaster. He's doing a pinup in the next one. And so is Lindsay Dorado, who's now in the WWE Cruiserweight division. So
nice.
It's really cool how many wrestlers have art skills too. But I think most of these guys, whatever their exterior is, they have a sort of soul of an artist inside of them. Guys that even Virgil or Greg Valentine or Honky Tonk Man or guys that you might think of as, you might not think of like that, but they all have it. It's all in them. And I think it's really cool.
Well, it is really cool. It's really great stuff. I definitely encourage people to check it out. Your volume 4 is available on Kickstarter right now, correct?
Yeah, that's, this is our biggest book to date in terms of lineup. We have Jerry doing the cover, obviously, and then Ric Flair, Mick Foley, Cody Rhodes, Kenny Omega, all doing stories.
Wow.
And then Tugboat and Lindsay Dorado. And then we also have Ed McGuinness, Robbie Rodriguez, and Andy Belanger from Southern Cross, who's sort of right in the middle of being he's an independent wrestler, but also a professional comic penciler. So, he does the art for Southern Cross. So, it's such a perfect lineup to me. All these guys are guys that I've wanted to work with in various capacities. Lindsay Dorado was like the first wrestler to ever wear a headlock shirt to the ring back in 2008 at King of Trios. And, so it's cool to have him on, and it's funny because at the time I didn't even know he had art skills. The day that I knew that there was a possibility that Cody Rhodes was going to get, was going to ask for his release, he was at the top of the list of guys that I wanted to work with, and Kenny forever. And, I grew up reading all of Mick's books. So, it's an unbelievable lineup, for me personally. And I think for fans too, Mick and I are doing a Christmas story, a headlock themed Christmas story, which I think is going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, of course. Right.
I'm really excited about it. And that's a fun collaboration because obviously Mick is an accomplished writer and a super creative guy. And, when we're hammering out the story, he presents the idea and then we start, picking at it and coming up with, details and whatnot. And, he likes some of my contributions to it. And that's, that makes you feel good as a, as a guy who's like sort of a self-taught, self-published comic book writer, to have a guy on that level compliment your idea making and stuff is pretty fulfilling.
Absolutely, absolutely. We will definitely have a link to the Kickstarter on our show notes, as well as a link to your site as well. And in the meantime, we'll see if you can, defeat your opponent today in the ring, which is the geek seat. So, Mike, I think he's ready.
Just no body slams. Come on.
I just drank a cup full of raw eggs in preparation for this. So.
Oh boy.
So well, he'll be vomiting in the Geek Seat. Got it.
I was going to say we'll stand back then.
Exactly. Well, Michael, let's see how you can do with the Geek Seat. Are you ready for your first question?
Sure.
What was your favorite geek out moment?
I know it's sort of newish, but I think the fight in Civil War with, you know, both Team Cap and Team Iron Man was a really cool thing to see sort of play it out on the big screen like that, and to have it done, I don't know, to have them do justice with it. It was really, you know, I was watching the whole thing sort of just super excited, and I think they hit all the right notes, and I definitely enjoyed that.
That's awesome.
It's a great scene. I watched it just that scene just the other day. I was like, that's all I need right now.
It is, because it's the ultimate superhero fight between the two groups.
It really is.
Because none of them want to really hurt the other, but they have to stop them. And so it was actually pretty fun. What was your most disappointing geek out moment, though?
I don't know if this necessarily qualifies as geek. I don't know. When I was a kid growing up, Clash of the Titans was my favorite movie. And for years, I was like, oh, they should remake that with like current technology. And they did. And it was awful. It was horrible. Like, I can't even, like, I won't even watch it. Like, a lot of times, like, if I'm writing, I'll just put something on for noise in the background. And, you know, a lot of times superhero movies or fantasy movies or whatever are easy to just have on, you know, particularly if I've already seen them, then I don't have to follow them, but it's just there for sort of white noise. But I can't even have that thing on. Like, it was very upsetting.
Oh, I understand that.
Possibly tied with Bane explaining his plan in Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, ow. Yeah, I could see that. All right. What geeks you out the most?
Comic-Cons.
What about them?
Being out there and being amongst people that are excited about comics and excited, you know, the energy there and that sort of, acceptance of that culture that had been marginalized for so long, and to see it celebrated now, and, you know, to talk with people and interact with people, you know, even people that aren't necessarily interested in what I'm doing, but just people that are there, you know, celebrating this thing that, you know, a lot of us had done for years sort of, you know, in the shadows, and now it's sort of out there. And, you know, like I said, the energy, you can't beat it.
Oh, sure. But what turns your geek off?
Message boards, people that think that they own fandom. You know, I think that sort of stuff, it hurts. And I think to a certain extent, I think that's what people's intentions are, because they want everybody else to go away so they can have their little corner to play in. But
oh, sure.
You know, obviously, like, comics, you know, aren't necessarily, you know, they're doing better now, but I mean, for a period of time, I mean, comics were doing really, really awful. And, you know, it wasn't enough. I mean, the current fan base wasn't enough to sustain it. So, you know what I mean? Like, sure, you can argue that, you know, maybe they're pandering to different social groups or whatever. I think that's trash, but whatever. But I mean, I think that people think that it's pandering. I don't think the pandering. I think it's good to make comics more inclusive for everybody. And sure. I think that from a business perspective, it keeps comics going. I mean, if a young black girl comes into your store because she's reading about, you know, Riri Williams, then she buys something else that you like, then that's keeping what you like afloat. And, you know, more dollars in the business keeps more stores open. And you know, I mean, just don't be a dick. I mean,
there you go. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Milo Garrett from 100 Bullets.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. That's my like all time favorite, I think, comic arc for anything. And he seems like a good hang, you know, drinking some drinks, chasing some tail, maybe getting into a fight, you know.
Yeah, what the hell, you know, it's all cool. I like that. What fictional character would you not like to meet?
I think Mojo. I'm guessing he smells. I mean, something that looks like that doesn't seem like it would smell very good. And not only for reality TV either. So
yeah.
It's like two great tastes that don't go great together.
Yeah. Well, it's the ultimate of reality TV, if you think about it. Yeah. Mm. Yuck. Okay. Next question there. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
All right. So, again, kind of stepping out, but creator-owned, I think, is my favorite.
Creator-owned?
Creator-owned. I think it's done a lot for comics. And as a person who owns their own creation, it makes me happy.
I do understand that. What is your ideal geek occupation? And I have an idea already.
Yeah, wrestling comic book writer.
Hey, ding, ding, ding. That's exactly where I was going with that one. I could totally see that one. What geek occupation would you not like to do, though?
I don't think I'd want to be an editor. You know, I think it takes a special person to be a good editor and to not, you know, sort of get themselves involved in, you know, their own personal preferences involved in the stories and whatnot. And I've seen that a little bit, not on my end, obviously, because I'm my own editor, but, you know, some of my friends that work in different companies, and I don't know, I think there's a line that you have to walk there that seems nigh impossible. So.
Awesome. I do understand that. You ready for your final question, Michael?
Yeah, I am.
All right. Your final question in the geek seat is, what is your ultimate geek fantasy?
I'd like to see Headlocked as a late night cartoon voiced by a bunch of my wrestling friends.
Wow. That would be awesome.
That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I could see it.
No, I think it's a great, I mean, it's just, the problem is that everything that's on late night in the cartoon range is, you know, absurdist comedy. So
why not do a wrestling thing? I think it'd be a great fit, actually.
I mean, I think it's a great concept. I think people would dig it. You know, I mean, that HBO, I remember the HBO Spawn series was really cool. Like, I always remember that as being like a midnight thing. And, you know, I think it would be cool. You could do the story, and the story could be, you know, as gritty as it needs to be. And then, you know, I think it's good for the boys to have, you know, have some voice acting credits, because then maybe they don't have to fall down so much.
Absolutely.
Save them from a couple concussions or something like that.
It's a way out, you know, or at least it's a toe out when you're ready to get out, instead of, you know, having to take bumps for the rest of your life.
Oh, sure. No, I could definitely see that. Well, Michael, guess what? You have made it through the geek seat. Congratulations.
All right.
Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $60.04.
Hey, we've gone up.
Yeah, well, you know.
It's going to push me into a new tax bracket, guys.
Well, it is only good on the station. It devalues tremendously the further you down to earth you go. Well, awesome. Definitely great to have you. Again, we will have links to your Kickstarter campaign on the show notes, as well as, now I know you tour a lot. What's some of the next conventions you're going to be at?
For our Kickstarter tour, we start next weekend in Emerald City in Seattle. I got Ric Flair with me there.
Woo!
Then,
sorry, I had to do that.
Doing a couple of wrestling shows in March. I think I'll be at WrestleCon at WrestleMania weekend. Also at the Evolve shows, selling after WrestleCon. And then SuperCon Retro in Miami. And I'll be there with Booker T. C2E2 with Waller, Flair, and Lita, and some others that I haven't confirmed yet. And Planet Comic Con in Kansas City with Flair and Lawler. So we have a pretty intense April coming up. So 4 weeks or 4 shows in 5 weeks.
Wow.
And I still have to work my regular job. So it's going to be a little crazy.
Well, we wish you nothing but the best, and thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment. Hey everyone, welcome back. Now we are going to be talking about our geeky guilty pleasures. You know, it's a way to learn more about your friends here on ESO, and you know, some things we've never admitted in public before, others we've, you know, talked about in the past, and people are just going to roll their eyes, you know, Mike and his pop figures, we know that's his guilty pleasure. But, you know, there's other things you just don't know about me. And, you know, we're going to be finding a lot about that this week. We have a great crew to join us for the segment. First, we have a newbie joining us. Let's welcome Joseph Martinez with us.
Hi, guys.
How are you, Joseph?
Howdy. Pleasure to be on with you guys.
So tell everyone a little bit about yourself, since this is your first time on the podcast.
I've been following you guys for a good bit, just listening on podcast and you know, on Facebook, and I'm better known at least to the Dragon Con crowd as the I cosplay as the ancient aliens meme guy. So if you've seen me around the internet, that's who you're listening to now. But you know, me and my wife cosplay several different things, mostly from like the Gears of War franchise. We have the Locusts, which are the bad guys from the Gears of War video game. So that was our first big cosplay, but I'm better known for their meme guy for obvious reasons.
That is awesome.
That's very cool. Well, we definitely appreciate you listening. Yes. Are we your guilty pleasure?
Yeah. Recently, yeah, you guys have been my guilty pleasure as
nobody wants to admit that they listen to our show.
Yeah. I have to come out.
Heck, I don't even want to admit that I watch or I'm on the show.
Dude, you never listen to our show anyway, so we know what you mean. Joseph, I remember, though, when Dragon Con 2 years ago, you were in the lobby of the Marriott dressed as the alien guy. And I took your picture, and you were like, "Mike," like that.
Yeah, I got pretty excited. Like I had a little fangirl moment, but it all goes back to whenever you guys did that video. It's on YouTube. Like the walkthrough through the Dragon Con hotels. That's where I really like got to know about you guys, and that helped me a lot. Like to navigate my first Dragon Con, because I would have been lost. But like that video and. It's the stupidest thing. Like I'll play it almost every year. Like that's one of my look at videos while I'm working on my cosplays. It's just entertaining, even if it's in the background. Like just to have that map in my head, watching that video. It was a pretty cool thing, and I know that helped me. So I know that helped a lot of people too.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
But that's where I got, you know, to know you guys, and that's why I freaked out of it. I'm like, oh yeah, it's Mike. So
no, it was awesome to meet you and. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Absolutely.
And of course, joining us back, the one and only Dan Carroll.
Hello, everybody. How's everybody?
Seriously, Dan.
That's right. Seriously, Dan. And it's back. We have done 4 weeks in a row with podcasts on Seriously, Dan.
But is that a new record for you guys? Four in a row?
Not counting being on the radio.
Well, I wasn't thinking radio.
But no, I mean the radio, we turn into podcast, we turn to radio broadcast. I don't know if that's a record, but season 4 is rolling along. Today was this weekend we put out a clip show. So
the best of 4 weeks already. That's awesome.
Yeah. No. We went back to 2013 and we interviewed folks at Con Carolinas. including our good friend of the ESO network, Jerry Chandler.
Oh, that's awesome. Very
cool. Yes.
Yeah.
That is very cool. Well, welcome back, sir. Yeah. Glad to have you here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm coming to you from the Garden State.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty exciting up here. We now have sushi in the rest areas on the Turnpike.
That's wow. Talk news. About fresh.
Actually, I heard about that from Steven Universe, so I haven't been.
No, I remember when the rest stops were all Howard Johnson's on the New Jersey Turnpike.
I remember when the Howard Johnson was at the Route 1 Circle in Woodbridge, New Jersey.
Oh, right. So do I.
1 and 9 separate.
Yes. We were just talking about that. We actually had a waitress quit on us at that restaurant.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, we'll talk about it off the air.
Yeah, no.
It's a good story. And of course, returning to the show after a long absence, actually, Jay Patrick.
Oh, guys, you know, it is nice that in this ever-changing world, this station always smells the same.
I knew I can count on you.
Thanks for having me back. This is awesome.
Oh, it's good. And, you know, you have a lot of things going on, and we're going to talk about that in our next segment of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait.
Yes, and we're all excited about this news. So let's jump in with both feet. Guilty pleasures, you know, especially geeky ones. You know, this is what we're talking about. You know, people have different foods that are guilty pleasures or comfort food, some people might call it. What is a guilty pleasure to a geek? What would you consider that? Wow, not everybody at once.
Hang on, this is Dan. I want to go first. I want to go first.
Go, Dan.
Go first.
So here's the biggest problem I had coming up, which is that our community embraces stuff that maybe in the mainstream offices and walkways and shopping malls of America might be considered a little off and a little odd, but we sit around discussing who the best Doctor Who is, and that is our normal and our mainstream. So it was really hard for me to come up with stuff that was actually guilty pleasures within our community.
I found the same thing. I mean, growing up, you know, almost everything that I found pleasurable, I felt a little guilty about because I couldn't really talk about it at school or with a lot of other people because, you know, it was dumb or I was a geek or I was a nerd or whatever, you know? So there was a lot of things that I liked that were put upon me that was not the standard by which people really enjoyed things. So, but now, I feel so much freer and, to the point where I'm almost guilt-free when it comes to my escapisms, just because I don't really care. Like, you know, and that's another thing too. I mean, as you get older, I think you care less about what a lot of other people think about what you like, because you just sort of like what you like.
Oh, sure. Everyone has their things that they like. Up until 10 years ago, like you guys were mentioning, Doctor Who was my big guilty pleasure because nobody else was really following it, as far as I knew, because I felt like I was a team of one on that.
Yeah, I totally agree. One of mine was something that you guys talk about all so often on the podcast, wrestling. You wouldn't believe that can't find anybody outside, you know, that you can talk to about wrestling, seeing all these arenas with all these thousands of people, you know, watching WWE. Well, that's one of my, like me and my kids, we love, you know, watching wrestling I grew up with it, you know, living in Puerto Rico, that's really big over there. So to me, like, that's one of my guilty pleasures. And like it was mentioned before, not so much now. A lot of these things are like mainstream, or, you know, geek is cool now, so, you know, a lot more people are more open about it. But back in the day, you know, you would say, oh, I like wrestling, oh no, you just like watching dudes in spandex. Well, no, sure, why not? But no, that wasn't the case. But that's one of my guilty pleasures, you know, quote unquote, which is a lot more mainstream now, or a lot more talked about, if you call it that.
I was actually surprised today, though, at work, because it just happened today. It was so weird. But I could hear two cubes down, some younger coworkers of mine were talking about things. And my ears kind of perked up because one of them said to the other, it's like, do you do dress up? And the male person was like, no, I don't do dress up. And the other person was like, I bet you LARP. And the other person was like, no, I don't LARP. And they're like, you LARP all over the place. And they were just like giving them crap because, and I was like, is nerd culture coming back to being like not cool anymore? Because like, I just thought that it was kind of a weird thing to make fun of him. Even though he wasn't somebody who LARPs, they were using that to make fun of him, like saying that he LARPed. And I was like going, in my cult, like in my circles, like LARPing is cool. Like I don't like that. I don't, that's not something to should be shamed about.
Hey Mike, this is Dan. I want to say that I had a situation just a couple of years ago where I was talking about what I do at Dragon Con and how proud I was being able to talk about the geeks and defend the geeks. And another project manager looked at me and goes, well, you're not a geek, right? And she was expecting a, of course not. I just do this as a job. And I said, well, no, of course I'm a geek. They wouldn't let me talk about it if I wasn't. And I was very shocked that that question came. But, you know, what we talk about within our community is not necessarily what they're talking about, like I said before, in the shopping malls or in the offices.
Yeah, there's still a little bit of a stigma to it. And, you know, I think it's a lot less, especially, you know, since a lot of the things that we grew up liking have become a lot more integrated into pop culture. But yet there's still, you know, there's still a little bit of it there. Now, one thing that I came up with for myself personally that I guess I would have to put as a guilty pleasure, just because it was something that even back in the day, I was not comfortable sort of announcing to people that I liked. But everybody here knows I'm a comic guy. I'm a big Batman fan, big Spider-Man fan, but I'm also a huge, huge Wonder Woman fan. But collecting comics back in the day, if you read Wonder Woman, that was like not cool. Like a boy reading Wonder Woman was not cool at all. And this is before Perez took over. You know, certainly watching Wonder Woman, if you were a guy, was okay because Linda was just so spectacularly beautiful. But reading it, and certainly you couldn't, like, you know, when I brought my comics to trade with people, like I left my Wonder Woman's at home, A, because I didn't want to trade them, and B, because I just couldn't, I could not like have them with me and get caught like reading about Wonder Woman. There, God forbid I wore like a Wonder Woman t-shirt or like had any Wonder Woman sort of merchandise. I mean, it was just, that was like, I mean, there were things that boys did and there were things that girls did. And Wonder Woman was for girls, even the comics. You couldn't really, as a boy, you were not encouraged to read that at all. So I sort of still feel that way a little bit just because it's ingrained in me, but it obviously it's a lot less so now.
What if you collected Peter Porker is the Amazing Spider-Ham?
I think that was like, that was better than like reading and collecting Wonder Woman.
To this day, though, I still will read The Amazing Spider-Ham. I just thought it was fun, you know, and that came out at a time where, you know, me and my friends were pretty serious about our comic book collecting. And so to have that title was, you know, it was just kind of fun. It was, and it's something that stuck with me. I mean, to this day, Peter Porker is the Amazing Spider-Ham is still one of my favorite comics. So
hey,
there.
The character showed up recently in the Spider-Verse.
Yes, when they brought all the universes together. Yeah.
Yeah, he was right there along with all the other ones fighting alongside.
No, it was actually awesome because, you know, everyone had that up until probably, I want to say, early 90s. I was collecting Archies still because I liked the wholesomeness of it. But you know, a lot of, you know, back at the time I was going back and getting the back issues and, you know, stuff from the 60s. Cause you can get them cheap at that point. You were able to get them in, you know, for a buck a pop or even less a lot of times. And those were, you know, same old stories, but they were, you know, it was an era because you had the 60s trying to meld with it. Like I had the first appearance of Josie and the Pussycats and stuff like that.
No, Josie and the Pussycats.
I have a lot of Archie comics too, and I have some that were Christian based comics that Archie did. And yeah, those again were the ones that I kind of had to leave home because nobody, like all the kids were like, you know, it's X-Men or New Teen Titans or Batman or Superman or whatever, but or like it's a lot of the Marvel stuff. But yeah, Archie was like, what are you reading that for? And yeah, I get it. And it's to the point where even today, you know, when they make a show about Riverdale, they make a show about Archie and they have to edge it up because if they just, you know, had it played like it is in the comic, it's too clean. It's too, like, it's not cool enough.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I have a music confession for you guys. If I can get it off my chest and confess a music love that might be surprising.
That's why we're here for you.
I will confess I am a huge fan of pop music, especially the musical stylings of Katy Perry.
No way.
Wait a second. Katy Perry's your guilty pleasure?
I love Katy Perry. It goes back to I love Britney Spears. You could probably track it all the way back to I love Debbie Gibson. It's probably where it all started. But yeah, I'm a huge Katy Perry fan. There, I'll admit it. I'm not ashamed.
He goes back that far.
That's not a guilty pleasure. That's so mainstream.
Well, yeah, but
isn't it kind of interesting how that flips though? Like if you like something geeky and you're talking to your coworkers in mainstream, you're like the nerdy guy. But in the nerd culture, if you like something that's mainstream, you have to feel guilty about that because you're like, how can you like that? That's mainstream.
Yeah, but you guys know my musical taste, and I want to just throw this out that Katy Perry is on the middle of the road compared to what I like. I started liking 1910 Fruit Gum Company when I was 4, and it went on to Bubblegum throughout the decades. So, you know, my Pandora is filled with Selena Gomez, Demi Lovato, Ally and AJ, who I got to meet one of at DragonCon this year. So, I mean, I actually have a whole section dedicated to my musical guilty pleasures on my list that I made up for today's podcast. And Katy Perry wasn't even, it's like Kesha is so mainstream. I didn't even include them as though I do have Don't Trust a Ho by 303. It's been going through my head since 2012. And I know it's a little bit older than that, but since 2012, when I stop and I stop thinking, that is the song that appears in my head. The soundtrack of Dan's life.
Wow.
I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, and I listened to it. Look, I'm a big fan of Pink Lady and Jeff, okay? I have Pink Lady's album, and I liked it so much I wore it out. So I had to get it again. So I'm a big Pink Lady fan. And I'll back that up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I could say that. Well, I used to, you know, guilty pleasure, of course, is every day I like listening to some, like, there's a podcast now, but I've been listening since 1985 to a show. It used to be called The Don and Mike Show. It was started on local radio in Washington, D.C., and then they went simulcasted around the country, and now they split up, and Mike O'Mara does his own podcast, and I listen daily. I hate to say it, almost like a radiophile with them.
What is it?
It's a comedy, goofy, real-life type stuff, kind of stuff like almost like what we talk about, but more mainstream. So it's actually kind of a lot of fun stuff with that. And, you know, they have celebrity interviews every once in a while, but it's just real. It's basically their life in a nutshell, but they get more into their personal lives than we do on the show here.
Gotcha.
And it's a lot of fun though. And like I said, you know, they started off as a morning zoo type thing and they just evolved into it. And it was neat hearing that happen and going on. You know, I was in high school when I started listening and now I'm an old fart. So. What can you say?
Because I have a degree in screen studies, and because I can talk seriously about movies, and in some ways I'm a movie snob, I have been referred to that as that a few times, more than once in my life. And but I do like cheesy action movies too. I mean, I really love for the last decade or so, I love the Underworld series and the Resident Evil series. And I've seen every single one of them in the theater. I just saw the last two, enjoyed the heck out of them. You know, those kind of movies really, like, I don't know. I just like them a lot. And I wish they were better. I mean, I know when I watch them that they're not, you know, I'm not watching some major, you know, major thing about of movie making, but major achievement in film. But yet they're just fun roller coaster rides, and I dig them. I haven't got into I used to like the slasher horror movies in the 80s, you know, all the Jasons and Freddies and Mike Myers and all that kind of stuff, Town That Dreaded Sundown, all that, like even the Imitation ones. But I grew out of that, and I know that horror is like a big thing, but that's one that I did tap out of.
Mike, did that start maybe for you in the 1980s with the Cannon films? Because I know the Cannon films kind of tried to exploit that whole action adventure with the Chuck Norris movies and the Death Wish movies and the American Ninja movies. And I'm wondering if you're like me and maybe that's where it,
like, I did watch a lot of those. I did watch a lot of those. I watched, you know, all the Missing in Action movies.
Yeah.
All the Seagal movies, Jean-Claude Van Damme. But then they started to just get like really bad, much so that I was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. And they kind of died off. The buddy film, you know, like I like buddy cop movies. I love, like, what's the one with Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal, Running Scared?
Running. Oh, that was an awesome movie though, dude.
Like those are like really cool movies. You know, I mean, Lethal Weapon gets all the praise because it was like, you know, on the top, but there was so many other like buddy cop stuff that I just ate it up. I mean, it was just, you know, kind of the thing to do. And back then it was like, you know, you just go to your video store and you just like pick them all up. Cause you're like, oh, that's a buddy cop movie, or that's a slasher movie, or that's a, you know, cause around that time was also, and I, you know, this is kind of a guilty pleasure, but I, you know, it is the sex comedies from the 80s and into the 90s. I mean, those were really huge too. So you just kind of go grab something that was like, you know, an Imitation Porky, so to speak.
Well, I worked at a video store, you know, through college, and we put those on the TV all the time.
And as much as I love John Hughes, like I do, I mean, I think John Hughes is I think he's underrated as a filmmaker, but he killed the teenage sex comedy. He absolutely killed it. And it was brought back a little bit with American Pie, but it was kind of, it limped, and it's just still really hasn't done like really, it hasn't been huge like it was back in the 80s. Back in the 80s, like it was a thing, right? I mean, teenage sex comedies were huge back then, and there were tons of them.
Yeah, I'm going to throw out two things. First off, in the 80s, teenage sex was a thing that was interesting and new and fascinating. And in the post-Lewinsky world, it didn't really matter that much. I'm going to throw that out. But but while you're in the 80s, I'm going to throw out a guilty pleasure I have from the 80s, and that is Michael Paré movies.
Yes.
Streets of Fire, Philadelphia Story, and yes. And of course, Eddie and the Cruisers.
Oh, Eddie and the Cruisers was awesome.
Yeah, and the best part, Joe Pantoliano was in Eddie and the Cruisers. Joey Pants?
Oh, yeah.
Are we all big Joey Pants fan? Good. Oh, yeah. Okay.
What happened to Michael Paré?
He got really old and stubbly, and he and the guy from Xanadu did a series of really crappy movies in the 90s that they made for about $190,000 each that were ran on cable. And then he kind of faded away until he did
I keep waiting for him to make a comeback because, you know, like, you know, Matt Dillon made a comeback, and a lot of those actors back in the 80s that were popular kind of disappeared in the 90s or whatever, and then kind of got a little comeback. But
no one's ever going to accuse Michael Paré of being an actor, though. As much as I love him, he is a movie star. But you know, he made a sequel to Streets of Fire with Claire Kramer.
Really?
Yes, it was made 10 years ago. It has not actually been released.
Oh, okay.
It says something about it. It's not good.
Yeah. Wow.
And without Eddie and the Cruisers, we never would have learned John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band.
Well, some of us would have. I'm just saying.
Well, yes, if you're in New Jersey, yes, you would
have. Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. I grew up down the street from a bowling alley where the house band was Twisted Sister, so we were here.
Oh, yeah.
Mike left.
Oh, yeah. Well, my thing, you know, we might as well, since we brought up John Cafferty, is, of course, movie soundtracks. Love movie soundtracks and listening to all the different songs from it. My computer has at least, I want to say, probably about 600 different soundtracks on it. Just, you know, the music from it is just awesome. You know, some of it's really good songs. You know, when you get the compilations, something like Guardians of the Galaxy, or if you have classical music and scores, something like The Hobbit, or you know, any of the Star Wars and stuff like that. But then you get some really stinkers, but there's one song you just got to get. And this is before there was an iTunes store where you could just buy a single song. And yes, folks, I do have 45 still in my collection.
I'm with you though. Cause when I was in, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, almost everything I listened to was movie scores. John Williams just kind of opened that door for me, and I just ate up like everything that he did, as well as Jerry Goldsmith. And then I got, you know, John Barry with the James Bond movies, and I would get those. And I didn't really listen to radio much. I didn't get into pop music and all that until later in high school. But for the longest time, if someone asked me, you know, what kind of music do you like? I would literally answer. My answer would be, I like music without words.
Well, there you go. But yeah, you know, I have all the really bad soundtracks like St. Elmo's Fire, or any, like we mentioned, the John Hughes movies, including The Breakfast Club.
Those aren't bad soundtracks.
No. Well, the only good song on the, you know, like, the Pretty in Pink one is Pretty in Pink. There's like two or three songs.
Yeah. That whole soundtrack for Pretty in Pink is awesome.
Mm. You know, but
you don't need to be guilty about that. That is awesome stuff. Oh. I will challenge anybody who thinks otherwise.
Oh, well, okay.
There, you heard it right there.
Okay.
Well, what about the soundtrack to Johnny Dangerously? Because I love that soundtrack.
That was awesome. All
right. You're on your own on that one.
Oh, Weird Al was on that soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I'm not fighting anybody over Johnny Dangerously.
Well, I'm going to throw out a soundtrack that's amazing, and you're going to not believe it, but my kids were into the Pokemon, of course, but also the Digimon soundtrack is one of the best soundtracks ever. It is just something we could listen to in the car for hours. A lot of post-punk in there, a version of Kim Wilde's Kids in America. That was the type of stuff that was on it, and I love it.
Yeah, along the same lines, I play a lot of Final Fantasy, and I know that's like not really a guilty pleasure, but the soundtracks for some of the music is just like, if you know Final Fantasy, like you recognize it anywhere if it's playing, and it's just, especially now since Final Fantasy 15 came out, you can listen to all the old tracks from all the old games, and it's just like, to me at least, like there's some of the games that are more cheesy than others, but you know, I listen to the music and it's just like, don't talk to me right now.
Hey Joseph, did you ever collect the compilations of the wrestling entrance themes?
I actually did, and if I couldn't afford it back in the day, I would use other means to download it. But yeah, I was big, and even to this day, like I'll have it on Pandora, and like the Rocks theme comes on, and you know, my first impulse is just, you know, you skip forward, but then it just catches you, and it's like, if you smell with The Rock, and you just keep on going.
It gets you pumped up, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the glass breaking, you Steve Austin. You just know it.
That's okay. On the way home, we were listening to my iPod and, well, my iPhone. And all of a sudden, I have it on shuffle, and the Hurricanes theme came up. And it's a stand back. There's a hurricane coming.
I got one better than that. The other day, I was listening to it, and my shuffle went off, and the third song in, Gangrel's theme song went, and I was like, "This is so awesome!"
That's old school right there.
With this strange lid, red liquid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he had the best entrance. Yeah. He had one of the best entrances coming up in that ring of fire.
And the song was just catchy, like the rhythm. Like they know what they're doing to pump people up.
Yeah.
Hey, do yourself a favor. Go on Spotify and don't look for the WWE issued, but where they've been re-recorded.
Oh, no.
Those things are hilarious. Like the generic, you know, whatever band has recorded the theme to Generation X. It's fantastic. You could spend a good 2 hours just laughing at those entrance theme covers.
Oh, I know what I'm going to be doing in the next 4 hours.
We gave him a new guilty pleasure. Awesome. All right. Anyone else have any?
I have one. This is like a completely different thing. It's not, you know, music related, but when it comes to collectibles or toys, Legos is my thing. And like it was mentioned earlier, back in the day, I wouldn't say, you know, play with Legos or build Legos or whatnot, or now that I collect them. But now, like it was mentioned, I'm older. I could give a crap if anybody thinks about it. And I collect Lego Marvel specifically. I have almost all the sets that have come out. And I build them, and I have a case for them, and I'm very proud of them. And that's one of my guilty pleasures. And my kids, when they bring their friends over, they think I'm the most amazing human being on earth.
Do you sing Everything Is Awesome when you play with them?
Oh, yeah. And I saw the Lego Batman movie, and that was, like, incredible. I'm probably going to see it again.
One of mine is, and this is probably going to be a huge discussion, I got a feeling, but to this day, I will watch on Netflix and the retro TV channels any action adventure from about 1978 to 1988. And I mean, the ones that everybody knows, Knight Rider, A-Team, of course, but I'm talking like Simon and Simon, Riptide. Oh,
I love Simon and Simon.
BJ and the Bear, Sheriff Lobo, any of those shows I'm a sucker for, and I will kill an hour just watching mindless TV from the 70s.
Oh, if Dukes of Hazzards comes on, I'm there.
Do you remember the cartoon?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Where they were racing around the world and the General Lee would talk?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is that real?
Yeah, it was real.
The cartoon? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. See, this is why I stopped watching TV in 1980 and didn't start up again until the 90s. I'm just saying.
Roscoe would chase him around the world. They were like in a world race. That was the whole plot of the cartoon.
I'm going to get you, Duke boys. That was pretty much it, the whole episode. And how many cars can they crash in different countries?
Exactly.
There's a lot of that stuff that it's weird. I mean, a lot of that stuff from the 60s, 70s, 80s, it's really repetitive. I can't watch much of it in a row because it is so repetitive, because they didn't plan for DVRs, and they acted like every show was somebody's first. So all the catchphrases and all that had to be done in every show, so that even the ones that I like a lot from the 60s, like Batman 66 or Get Smart or Addams Family, like when I watch them in succession, I have to take a break because they're so repetitive. They always have to get their one-liners in and all that. But there are shows from the 80s that, yeah, I mean, I don't think they hold up as well, but yet I find myself compelled to watch them. I mean, I'm a big Battlestar Galactica fan, and that dipped really low as it went on. Buck Rogers was the same thing. Something like Tales of the Gold Monkey, really fun show. But yeah, some of them are ones that I think it's more nostalgia than anything else.
Are you excited for the Chips movie?
No, I don't like the fact that Hollywood feels the need to satire things that were not comedies. Like I don't know, you know, you can go as far back as Dragnet or the Brady Bunch movie or what have you, but I think it's disrespectful. As much as it's sort of weird for me to say they're disrespecting Chips was not a comedy. I mean, Chips was a straight out action, you know, adventure show. And I just feel like making a comedy of it is just like they're disrespecting it. I just don't agree with that. 21 Jump Street, same thing. I don't agree with that sort of mentality of what they do with those.
So do you think they're making fun of it more than disrespecting it? Because I think they're actually abusing it. And that's kind of reason I like the Jump Street movie so much. Because a lot of this stuff doesn't translate seriously in a positive way.
But it could. I mean, you know, I think if they took a serious took it seriously, then they could introduce it to a whole new generation in a serious way. But they don't even try. They're like, hey, this was kind of corny when we look back on the show, so let's make it corny now. Like, nobody's going to take it seriously now. And I think that's really limited. I mean, I could see doing it like once or twice, but like I said, when you're doing it with Dragnet, or, you know, when you're watching, or when you're making, you know, the Brady Bunch movie, and you're implying that the family members are having sex with one another, I'm just like, that, like, when I watched Brady Bunch, that was a wholesome entertainment, and I just find it pretty insulting that they just treat it so disrespectful.
Because some of these they could bring back and make a franchise out of, like the $6 Million Man, they're going to reboot into a movie, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be a comedy.
That's what they've talked about. I mean, they've talked about doing it with Chris Rock. They've talked about doing it with, you know, whoever. I mean, that one's been, you know, talked about all over and over again. And every time they talk about it, they act like they're going to make fun of it. And I'm like, I love $6 Million Man. That was like an action adventure. That was an appointment television for me. And yes, when you look back on it now, the Sasquatch stuff and everything, it was really silly. But back then it wasn't silly to me. I mean, I was really interested in it. And I wish they could take those same concepts and update them so that they thrilled audiences now, rather than just say, let's make fun of them.
Well, I think that $6 Million Man suffers because The Bionic Woman was such a disaster when they rebooted The Bionic Woman as a serious thing a few years ago.
Right. But I think that was just because it was badly done, not because it shouldn't have been done.
Yeah, because I think if you wanted to, like, the two shows, if you were going to bring back one, The Bionic Woman actually has more substance to it when you look at the storylines from the TV show.
Right, she was a tennis player.
Or she dealt with the fact, or she, especially in, like, a Westworld world where we live in now, to explore that stuff towards the end of the series where she actually questioned, you know, is she human because she's part robot? I think it's interesting. And it's stuff that they explore over on HBO very seriously. And you could do that in a movie with that show, but they won't. It'll be a comedy.
There does seem to be a loss of, and I think this has been talked about before too, but there does seem to be like a loss of innocence now, where like a lot of the stuff that we grew up with, whether it's Brady Bunch or Little House on the Prairie or Happy Days, can't be done now because nobody would take that seriously, because you can't do wholesome family entertainment now. And I don't know what the answer to that is. I hate that might be right, but I'm hard pressed to look at things and say that that's not true, because I don't see anybody really trying to do it successfully or doing it successfully. So I can't speak to that. I do think it's a shame though.
Agreed
completely, because you know, in some movie studio or TV studio, they're playing with, oh, let's bring back Happy Days as a movie, and, you know, or something. McHale's Navy, they tried to do, It was horrible. Yes. You know, and that gets into.
And now I had Bruce Campbell in it.
Exactly.
like, come on, man. Bruce Campbell.
But it depends, you know, it's all in the, you know, eye of the beholder, and people think these serious things that were really good in the 70s. I'm shocked we haven't seen stuff like Kojak or, you know, stuff like that come back. Or does that make sense?
Didn't Kojak come back, though? I thought Kojak did come back, and it did not last.
I hope to God it
didn't. Yeah, 2005.
No way.
Wow.
Ving Rhames, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Okay.
I think the remake of A-Team was done pretty well, but they went the total opposite with that one. They made it like a bit too serious. I enjoyed it for what it was. But to me, they went a complete other direction with that one.
Yeah, I think SWAT was the same way, where SWAT was a show that was, you know, pretty big when I was growing up, and they did a remake of it, and the movie was really like just serious and over the top action, and I think that failed because of that. I mean, there's obviously there's not a right or wrong or right formula, but like I said, I find it when you look at the older actors that were in these things, and they look at the scripts of these new ones, and they're like, I don't want any part of that. I mean, you kind of, because you're disrespecting it, it kind of, you know, speaks to what they're trying to accomplish.
So,
but they're just looking at.
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we're talking about guilty pleasures, but it's interesting. One of the things, my guilty pleasures is seeing connections between movies that aren't there, or they might be tenuous. And you just mentioned SWAT. And one of the great things about SWAT was that SWAT was a practice ground for The Wire, because that production team came right out of SWAT and went right into The Wire.
I did not know that.
And I can't remember the director's name. He was one of the creators of The Wire, and he played Meldrick Lewis on Homicide. And he had the SWAT was his first directorial movie. And you can see that darkness obviously coming out of Homicide and going straight into The Wire, but stopping to practice the directing craft. So that's the type of weird stuff I like. And I'm going to throw out one other really less serious, judgmental kind of discussion. And that is, there's a movie called Reckless from the 1980s. Nobody's ever heard of it. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
I know what that is.
Yeah, it stars Adam Baldwin as the rich jerky kid, who's this secondary male, and Aidan Quinn as the primary male character chasing after Daryl Hannah. And it has one of my guilty pleasure songs, Never Say Never, which most people know by the title, I Might Like You Better If We Slept Together.
Yep.
And one of the greatest dance sequences ever in a movie. So I'm going to throw that out as something less remakeable.
Yeah, it's just weird that Adam Baldwin character became the real life president.
Oh, wow.
What? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was muted. Sorry, that won't happen again.
Wow, no holding back there, man. Come on.
What? Sorry.
Oh, man. Wow. Oh, God. Okay. Guilty pleasures, of course, for me, has to be, you know, memorizing. It's like I have a sieve for a memory, and just useless information or quotes from TV shows and watching old shows, especially the 60s and 70s TV shows. I could probably name what episode of certain things when people say things. Oh, that was that. And it's a guilty pleasure just watching them and being able to remember them so well. It's fun. And, you know, that's what I do with my time. I just sit around, you know, getting useless information so I can, you know, be great at team trivia.
What's your favorite quote, saying, or pose?
Ah, you have to go back to early episodes of Earth Station 1 to hear that one.
The very first geek seat, my friend.
Yes, that's right.
Although I'm sure it would be different than if we did it now than it was then.
Oh, God.
Yeah. A long time ago. I bet all my answers, well, most of them would be different.
Oh, it would, because, you know, Star Wars on Ice is not the most tragic thing I've seen anymore.
Wow. That's amazing.
Dude, I've been to Dragon Con many times now.
Yeah, but Dragon Con is not disappointing.
No, but seeing a guy wearing just a lei covering his nethers.
That you're saying is worse than Star Wars on Ice?
Yeah.
And Mike, you asked me to do that, so stop complaining about it.
It was the best $50 I ever spent.
I'm so cheap.
And that's how we joined the ESO network, folks. That's all you have to do. So, any last ones before we wrap up for the night?
The original V, the series. Wow. I want it so bad to come back as a movie, not a TV show.
Cool. Wow. Okay. Anyone else? Quiet. Okay.
Yeah. It's really difficult because, like I said, I don't feel guilty about anything that I really like now because I'm just over that step. You know, I'm over that now. If I like it, I like it. And one of the things that I think people who listen to our show, they know that if we like something, we're just going to tell people we like it. And it's, you know, not because he's here, but that's one of the reasons why I like conventions like Dragon Con, because you can let your, you know, geek flag fly, right? You can, if you like a particular thing, look how many people showed up at the panel for Sequest, right? Like Sequest. I had to tap out after a few episodes the first season. So it wasn't my show, but that show, that panel that they did, that retrospective that they did was so popular because people all around the world who liked that show, this was their place to gather and celebrate it together. And that's, you know, it's one of the beauties of conventions like that where it's mostly fan run, because you get to experience things and connect with people that like the same quote unquote guilty pleasures that you do.
Nope. That's very true. And that's what's great about cons nowadays. No matter what your guilty pleasure is, there's something
there's a
out
con
there.
For it.
Yeah, exactly. And trust me, you know, no matter how warped you might think it is, it's out there.
Yes. Well, I have been mistaken for a furry before.
Yes, but that's with your shirt off. With that note, we want to hear from you, esopodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's What to Watch. Well, now that we've got the Oscars behind us, it's time to dive headfirst into spring movie season. Spring is increasingly becoming a prelude and kind of a warm-up to the summer blockbuster season, so we've actually got some really big, exciting movies coming out in the next few weeks. And the first of those out this weekend is Logan. For a long time, X-Men fans have been really hoping for a gritty, violent, and R-rated Wolverine movie that really captures the essence of the character. And it looks like that's finally delivered with Logan. This one is supposed to be Hugh Jackman's final outing as the character, although I wouldn't be surprised if we see him show up in it as a cameo appearance in other X-Men films. But even if this is his final appearance as the character, it looks like he's going to go out on a really strong note. This one is getting great reviews so far, and I'm really looking forward to catching it in theaters. Although Logan's getting the most buzz this weekend, we've got a couple other wide releases also coming out in theaters. One of those is The Shack, which is based on a best-selling novel. It's about a father who's struggling after experiencing a family tragedy. He ends up going on a spiritual journey after finding this mysterious, abandoned shack in the wilderness. We've also got Before I Fall, which is getting meh reviews. It's sort of like a darker Groundhog Day, about a girl who has to relive the same day over and over and over. We've kind of seen this thing before, and this one looks like it's aimed a little more towards the teen audience. Finally, don't forget that Doctor Strange is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. I really enjoyed seeing this one in theaters, so I'm looking forward to watching it many more times on Blu-ray at home.
Well, that's it for this week's What to Watch. Be sure to tune in next week, and I'm excited to talk about the King Kong movie.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Well, now you can hear is where you can find out about where you can find ESO network personnel throughout the next couple months, starting with, not this weekend, next weekend, we're talking about March 3rd through the 5th, that's MarsCon. That's in Bloomington, Minnesota. The Flopcast's own Cornflake will be there. And if you haven't heard about Dementia Water Aerobics that Cornflake hosts, I think that says it all right there.
You could almost say they're demented.
You could almost say that. But look, it's a special thing. And I want footage. I need footage. I can't get up to Minnesota myself. So someone needs to go there, record just a few bits on their phone or whatever, and send it to me. I would appreciate that. No, MarsCon is more than that. It's also a very interesting convention. We've had many people that have been there on the show before, including Luke Ski, right? He did the Geek Seat once, and he goes to MarsCon. It's a celebration of humor, parody, all sorts of fun stuff. So definitely check it out. And that same weekend, Flopcast's own Kevin will be at the Northeast Comic Con. Now, he doesn't have a table. He's not doing water aerobics. He leaves that to Cornflake. But he will be there wandering around. So if you see a fellow that looks kind of lost in the mall, in the Northeast Mall there in Hanover, point him in the right direction, say howdy to him, and tell him that you love the Flopcast, because that's where Kevin will be. That's March 4th through the 5th. He'll probably be hanging around Bert and Adam, because Adam West and Bert Ward will be at that show. I wish I could be there as well. It's the Northeast Comic Con that I went to, that I was part of in November, was a blast. So I can only imagine that this one in March is going to be a great, because it's a bigger venue. So awesome. Then the weekend after that, March 10th, 11th, and 12th, is right here in Atlanta, is Joe Lanta and the Toy Collectibles Extravaganza. We've had Martin on to talk about this event. It's a great show, and it's turning out to be one of the biggest shows here in Atlanta, especially if you're into toys, certainly if you're into G.I. Joes. A lot of guests, a lot of fun dioramas, a lot of fun dealers, so you will spend money if you're into toys. There are a lot of great panels too. We know our good friend Phantom is going to be putting on some panels, and we will be recording a live episode of ESO. We'll be recording it. We will be hosting a discussion on the most popular 8-inch figures of all time. Yes, I'm talking about Mego figures. I had a number of them growing up. They're great fun, and I can't wait to talk all about it. Mike and I will be there, and we will be recording that show to air as an ESO episode. So be part of the discussion. If you know anything about Migos, if you love Migos, please come out on March 11th. Our panel's at 4 p.m., and the actual panel room will be announced at the show. So check us out and say howdy. It's going to be a fun time. March 18th to the 19th is Huntsville Comic and Pop Culture Expo. That's in Huntsville, Alabama. The ESO's will be represented by our semi-frequent co-host, Lacey. She doesn't have a table or anything, but she will be there, and she'll be representing ESO. So if you see Lacey, talk to her, tell her what a great job she's doing as a co-host, and say howdy. March 24th through the 26th is a Doctor Who related convention in Baltimore called Regeneration Who. And our own geek girl herself, Angela Pritchett, will be attending that event. That same weekend, March 25th through the 26th in Greenville, South Carolina, is the South Carolina Comic Con. This is one of our favorite events ever since Robert has put on this show. I have been there except for last year where I was sick, but Mike was there. So ESO was represented. We'll have two tables there. There'll be an ESO table. Mike Faber will be manning that one. And I will have a table as well with artist Peter Cutler. We'll be selling Tiki Zombie books as well as some of the other comics that we work on. So please come on out. Greenville, South Carolina, March 25th to 26th. This is a family-friendly show. It has got a lot of pop culture guests as well, but its main focus is families and comics. So please come out and support this great show. Then in April 28th through the 29th is Treklanta. That is in Atlanta, Georgia. And Mike and I will be hosting a panel on Saturday afternoon about what we learned from Star Trek, the over 50 years of the franchise. So that should be fun. And there's also some great guests there. I'll be around all weekend. It's going to be a blast. Also that same weekend, April 28th through the 30th, is RavenCon. That is in Williamsburg, Virginia. Angela Pritchett will be attending that show as a guest. May 5th through the 7th is Wholanta. That is a recently christened, if you might have known it in the past, is Timegate, but it is the newly christened Doctor Who-focused convention here in Atlanta. It's Mike, myself, ESW's Jennifer Hartshorn will be there. Angela Pritchett, Geek Girl, will be there as well. I keep calling her Geek Girl, but she also has a lot of Doctor Who cred because she does write a Doctor Who themed cookbook, which is very popular. So it's one of the reasons why she's a guest at so many Who-related conventions, including Wholanta. They just announced a new guest this week for Wholanta, which we're very excited about. Nicola Bryant will be there. She played Perry, the companion to the Sixth Doctor, who will be there as well. So Sixth Doctor and his main companion will be at that show. Very excited to be part of Wholanta. It may have a different name, but we love it all the same. And then also just announced to Mike and I will be at Con Castaburus, and that is in Huntsville, Alabama. We are very happy to be there. Actually, also Jennifer Hartshorn from Earth Station Who will be there. And I do believe that Nicole from the Terminus podcast will be there as well on the ESO network. So we were there at Con Castaburus last year, had such a great time. They, crazy enough, they asked us back. So we are very excited to be part of that event as well. More details on exactly what our panels will be as it continues, as we do more of these. So keep tuned to the Con Report, and we'll also be promoting any shows that you want to rave about. So please contact us because we love talking about conventions.
Before we get out of here, we actually had an alternative motive for having JP up on the show. JP, you have a very special announcer for us.
Yeah, I thought you called me up to fire me, but no.
No, what I was doing was canceling the Adam and JP show for you.
Oh, that's okay, because we don't do that show anymore.
See?
There you go. Yeah, we rebranded. We took the Adam and JP show. We took what everybody loves, apparently, like the feedback that we got with the Adam and JP show, and that is Adam and I basically just talking to each other. And then we kind of added a little more structure to it and rebranded as Podcasterole. And so, yeah, every week we do the same thing. We talk about pop culture stuff, but you know, rather than going down the same rabbit holes week after week after week, we try to force ourselves to, you know, expand outward and bring in stuff that maybe we really haven't talked about that much before. Like this past week, we did our favorite TV spinoffs. We've done our favorite films of the year 2000. One-hit wonders that should have had a longer career. And what I have discovered and what I was hoping for is it just makes for better conversation in that hour that we spend together. And so in doing that, we rebranded and changed our name to Podcasterole, because that's what it is. It is just a whole bunch of stuff on the same podcast week after week.
Now, I would imagine, and you guys do a great job, and you guys have been doing it for how many years now?
2011 is when Adam and I first recorded a podcast together.
That's amazing. So, Yeah, that's a lot of time, a lot of hours spent. Do you find that it's a challenge to keep it fresh?
I think the unpredictable stuff that you don't know what's going to happen, just, I mean, you guys know, and, you know, recording together for so long, there's just a certain chemistry, and you know, regardless of what you talk about, a couple of gems are going to come out of that, you know, time you spend together. We know that's going to happen, but I think maybe less worried about the freshness and more worried about the longevity of that episode, because we tended to be very in the moment of the stuff that we would talk about, which is cool the week it comes out. But then, you know, if you bring new people on board and then they go back and try to listen to your old episodes and it's filled with news items, you know, that are relevant to that week that you recorded, you know, maybe the shelf life of that particular episode isn't as long as you want it to be. And so that's a little bit of our motive, is trying to make it. I mean, we still stay topical. You just can't not be. But the bulk of the episode and the subjects that we pick out to talk about, if they're not timeless, at least they're evergreen. So like this week, you know, the Tuesday show that came out this week was the Wolverine on film. And we just kind of go through the Wolverine, you know, Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, through the X-Men movies up into Logan. And so you can go back and listen to that a few years from now and still get relevant information out of that.
Yeah, good call. Well, one thing that you have my admiration for is that, you know, unlike Mike and myself, you guys are recording all the time in the same room. And then for years you've been doing that. Mike and I, we have to keep a separation.
Well, it's part of the contract, dude. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're in the same room 4 times a year. Come on.
Exactly. Otherwise, someone dies.
Yeah, I didn't think we could talk about it because of the gag order.
you're
absolutely right. We've been very dedicated to I can only think of one time that Adam wasn't in studio with me when we recorded, and that's because he had strep throat. And we still did a show and we Skyped it in. But yeah, we're pretty fortunate that we live relatively close to each other. Some people think we live together. Not true. We just live in the same town. And
rumor had gone around that you guys were actually a couple or something at the time.
No, it's not a Bert and Ernie thing.
Okay.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but yeah, we just live close enough to be able to hang out once a week and knock out a couple of shows.
Gotcha.
No, it's amazing. Every time I look at my feed, a new episode of Podcast Roll, another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, damn, do these guys even sleep or have real jobs?
I don't sleep. And some say I don't have a real job. But hey, that just lends more time to record podcasts. Yeah. Every Tuesday and Friday, we drop an episode. So
that's amazing. That's amazing. And you guys, you know, I will say, you know, it doesn't get old. I mean, every time I tune in to listen to you guys, it's the rapport that you guys have. And, you know, you do make it interesting. Whatever topics that you guys throw out, obviously, you know, you guys have opinions on and you're willing to talk it out. And it's the personalities of it that make it interesting. So no matter what you're talking about, people will want to tune in.
I appreciate that. And you guys know a little something about making relevant conversation about topics. You've been doing that for a couple of years, I think.
Maybe one or two. The rest of the time it's all been training stuff.
Well, you know, I'll ask your opinion on this, and this is something we discussed on the show before we rebranded. And, you know, obviously Adam and I talked to each other about, and that is, you know, we thought about the new person that we might bring to our show. And when they're going through, you know, either the ESO site or they're going through iTunes or any of these podcast outlets, and you see a show called The Adam and JP Show, would you listen to that if you didn't know who Adam and JP were? And, you know, through professional advice, I came to the conclusion of no, you probably would not. And so that's why we, you know, it was never an egotistical thing to name it that. It was, you know, at the time we were also, you know, on a radio, on the radio, and it sounded like a radio show name. And, you know, now that we're focusing solely on the podcast, it just made sense and the time seemed right to rebrand to something that sounds more like a podcast name. And that's how we came up with Podcast Roll. And it's not a cooking podcast.
Have you actually had people ask that?
No, but that's something we joked about before.
Okay.
But if you Google Podcasserole, you get a, and especially, here's a fun game. Google Podcasserole and hit image search, and you get like Podcasserole for the first line. And then we start to pop up.
At least you pop up.
That's true. We do. Yeah. And rising every day. I love to, never mind.
Oh, that's what she said, but you know.
Never mind.
Exactly. Well, we are so happy to hear that you guys are continuing and on to bigger and better things. And I think this is going to be great for more marketing for you guys also.
I think so too. It looks good. And, you know, this weekend will be our first trek out to a convention under the Podcasserole banner. And that's the Louisville Arcade Expo going on this weekend in Louisville, Kentucky. And it's our fifth year to go to that. And it's a lot of fun. If you're in the Louisville area, or, you know, any of the surrounding areas, that's a short drive, it's definitely, and you're into retro video games, it's definitely worth heading over to the Ramada Plaza in Louisville and checking out the Arcade Expo. And we'll be there all weekend.
That is awesome, man. You know, congratulations. And, you know, I'm sure we'll see you guys at Dragon Con at least, if not before.
I hope before. That's so sad. It seems like that we only see you guys at Dragon Con. And then every year we're like, yeah, we'll be down between now and next year. And here we are marching towards 2017 Dragon Con. And we haven't been to Atlanta since last year, but we'll definitely be back this year and ready to have some fun and hang out. Oh, I got to tell you, at Dragon Con, one of the highlights for me every year is the ESO hangout.
Yep. It's always fun when we get to see you guys and you guys make your 30-second appearance and go, hey, we got better things to do. See ya.
I stick around longer than that. It's like 45 or 50.
Yeah, exactly. We had photographic evidence that you actually hung out with us this year. So it's actually pretty impressive.
That's true.
It was actually neat. And everyone was like, why were we there? Who are those guys? Oh, that's Adam and JP. That's what they look like. Awesome.
Wait. Was that a good that's what they look like, or is that a bad that's what they look like?
So how can people find the new podcast?
AdamandJP.com. You can go there. Also, of course, ESOpodcast.com. And we are on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and coming soon to Spotify.
Excellent. 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 Looking forward to hearing what comes next with you guys.
Thank you, guys.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the ESO podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us and hearing about some of our guilty pleasures. And you should have heard some of them that we were talking about off the air. God, the beep would be going on big time on that one. But we do want to thank everybody and want to thank our guest. Dan Carroll already had to take off. He had Dragon Con business to take care of. So, Joseph, you've made it through your first episode, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity and, I'm looking forward to collaborating more in the future and seeing you guys at Dragon Con.
Most definitely, sir. Just look for the guy with the big long hair sticking up and aliens ripped around his neck.
Absolutely.
And, of course, JP, congratulations on the new podcast, my friend.
Oh, thank you, sir. It's more of the same, just rebranded like we talked about. And, yeah, you can find us where you get your podcast, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio. We're everywhere. You can't ignore us any longer.
Yeah, exactly. A podcast named after a casserole. How bad can that be?
Google it.
Exactly. It's a smorgasbord. That's what we should call ourselves, Earth Station Smorgasbord.
We have the spaghetti monster. Why not?
Exactly. Why not? Mikey, thank you. You've made it through another episode.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about, sir?
I do. You know, a little while ago, when Beeline Creative came out with their Star Wars tiki mugs through ThinkGeek, I was thinking that they are immensely popular, and this is going to be a trend now. We're going to see a lot of geeky tikis come out, and literally that's what Beeline Creative is calling them. They've already released Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles tiki cups this earlier this year, and there are four waves of geeky tiki lines of mugs coming in the next year, starting with Guardians of the Galaxy mugs, then Marvel Heroes, including Spider-Man, Wolverine, Iron Man, and so forth. Then they've got some Star Trek ones coming out with Kirk, Spock, Klingons, Gorn, etc. And then finally, probably around the October season, you're going to get some Universal. Well, I can't say Universal. They're going to be monster themed mugs. So you've got Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, creature, werewolf, mummy, that kind of thing. Also combined with what Mondo's doing, Mondo's releasing some mugs that are they've already released some that are Gremlin. Molded like Gremlins from the movie, and starting this week they're selling ones that are shaped like Xenomorphs from the Aliens movie. So yeah, geeky tikis are here to stay. This is probably only the start of things until things get really oversaturated. I know that I'm already thinking of giving up the ghost because there's no way I can afford all these mugs. But a lot of them look really cool. I definitely encourage people to check it out. And cool, they're fun. Mug collecting should be fun, and I'm glad to see that there's such an interest in tiki mugs and tiki pop culture and combined with geekiness. I think it's a really cool thing. So congratulations to Beeline Creative for getting it done and out there. And yeah, we'll just see what the next waves are going to be like.
That is awesome, sir. All right. I've got to go out and say again, damn it, Pop Figures, you did it to me again. This time, Twin Peaks Pop Figures. That's right, folks. From the fine folks who brought you all the fun, you know, Funko Pop stuff, we are having Twin Peaks Pops. It's pretty darn awesome, actually, what they have come out with this time. Basically, we have the Bob from Twin Peaks. You have Agent Cooper. You have Leland Palmer, the Log Lady, the Giant, and you also have Laura Palmer, of course, wrapped in plastic.
And I was going to say dead Laura Palmer, too. Like, that's yep. Like...
it's pretty darn amazing. Awesome. And, of course, they have Audrey from Twin Peaks. So you have pretty much the whole crew. Yeah, I would have liked to see some of the other weird characters.
I'm sure there's going to be a second wave, especially this is only the first wave. This is only the pre new series coming back wave.
Of course, this is the old series, and you know, you'll have new characters and you'll have more Twin Peaks everything, because Twin Peaks has been announced that it's coming back in May. And if you have Showtime, it is pretty darn awesome. And very much looking forward to it. There's been not really many leaks, actually, from the set. So we're all in for a big surprise for what's going to happen. I can guarantee, though, there'll be a darn good cup of coffee involved.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, speaking of the Funko, because Toy Fair was just last week, and I was aware of their announcements as well. And look, I've dipped my toe a little bit into the pop figures. I have a few. But those Westworld ones, I think I'm going to be all over those. Those look too good for me to say no to. Those are really awesome. Yeah. You're just going to have to figure out which one's a host and which ones aren't.
Exactly. You have to know who's who and who's what.
My wife is obsessed with Pops. Like, half of our wall is like Pops. And now she started with the Stranger Things Pops.
Right. Really. Yeah. Those are cool.
Because she likes the show, we both do, and that's what she started collecting. And I'm like, how many of these things exist? And you know, you just go to Hot Topic or one of these stores, and that answers your question.
There's a lot of them.
Oh, there is tons of them out there, folks.
as my co-host can tell you, there's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. I just hope they do. They do more David Lynch. Pop figures.
you want a pop figure velvet. Eraserhead, don't you?
Eraserhead, and I want a whole Blue Velvet series.
Wow. All right, before we go down to Betty Dad paths right there, we want to hear from you, of course, esopodcast@gmail.com, or you call us 404-963-9057. And if you're the 100th caller, JP will give you his own recipe for a podcast casserole.
Podcast casserole.
I know it is, but you're making a podcast casserole.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I knew what I was saying for this, dude. Sometimes I do know it when I mess up things, you know? Come on. Everyone, you know, no drinking on that one. Sorry, folks. But, you know, we will be back again next week when we are going to be going to the movies again, and we are looking at Logan, the final role, supposedly. I'm doing that in air quotes. For Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine, and it'll be
Patrick Stewart. He said it wasn't going to be his last.
Patrick Stewart, I could see. Hugh Jackman, he's ready for the old man Logan roles. So I'm almost, you know, I'm not holding my breath with this is going to be his last, because, you know, just put enough zeros at the end of the check, you know, they'll definitely, you know, bring him back. So with that being said, we will see you next time here on Earth Station 1, and it's always been a pleasure to talk to each and every one of you. We'll see you here next time. Peace. And we're done. Ta-da!
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com eStore, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.